Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to this first episode of the new year, 2018. Before I introduce today's guest, I wanted to give you an update where a few weeks ago, episode Colorado 7, we had the Colorado Springs Economic Development Committee on with the Pikes Peak Community College as well, doing a economic development research project. And today we've included a link to the survey that they put out. I would love to see everybody that's listening jump on here, do this quick survey. I went through, did it myself just a couple minutes ago. I can give you some highlights. But when you get the link will be in the write-up, both on our newsletter, and I'll put it on the website. That's what we're looking at here right now. If you're looking at the video form, the link goes to some details about what it is that they're doing, who it is that gets the information, security about the information, which we all of us listening here should be interested in. And then the survey, kind of clicking through. One thing I did notice when I started going through it is they do require you to enter all this information about yourself. So the first thing you ask is where you sit, whether you're a pure cybersecurity company, training, education, state government, whatnot. The next couple question areas in section one, cybersecurity company details. They ask a lot about what it is that you're doing, how many employees you have, how many companies and contracts or whatnot do you engage with in the city of Colorado Springs, with types of services do you offer? And funny thing, I asked the question twice and said, pick the number one, the top one on your list that you make the most revenue from, and then where you fit in some government codes, things like that. In section three, you see that we have questions like what is needed to develop, what are the advantages of hiring, what organizations are playing key roles, what should, who should, what types of people, what types of educational requirements you're feeling that are needed for your hiring and what you're doing. Please support this Economic Development Committee efforts if at all possible. Take the extra time. It'll help us all in this community to know all the key things that are going on and hear input from you. So thanks a lot for participating. And now we're gonna introduce and move on to our guest for today's show. Thanks. Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we have the founder and CEO of Opposi, which is Rick Deacon. How you doing today, Rick?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Not bad. So we're looking at your product and you do anti-phishing and anti-malware, which is interesting. We're going to talk about that and how the industry needs and problems are coming about and what you're actually doing there too a little bit with your company. But first, Rick, give us a background. Give us the 2 minutes on you. How did you start out?
Yeah, totally. Appreciate it. It's a nice intro, by the way. So, yeah, I started basically as a hacker, I guess you could say sort of as a teenager. And then from there, what ended up happening is that I found that I could turn that into something professional. So turn that in from I guess you could say, gray hat to white hat. So I began a career sort of as a penetration tester after I ended up hacking MySpace in late 2006, early 2007. Did a talk about that at DEF CON, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with. And after that, I sort of jumped right into my information security career. So I spent a lot of time working for Fortune 500s at consulting firms, trying to figure out what their big problems were, what the issues that they had were, and sort of trying to adapt my testing style as a penetration tester, but also then eventually adapting my knowledge set to figure out, okay, here are the common problems that every company has and the ones that people can't solve. So how do we focus on those? How do we fix that? And then that drove me to sort of move away from penetration testing and start Aposi, which the goal of is basically how do we make security better for everyone across the entire world, whether it be an individual or an organization. So a quick introduction on myself.
I'm interested in the MySpace thing. Now, I didn't hear your talk at DEF CON, but I'm curious if you step back to what was in your mind when you first were playing around, like, hey, wait, I could probably break into a backdoor here. What were you thinking?
Yeah, so at the time, web application security was still a little bit young. Mm-hmm. So what the vulnerability that I ended up exploiting was called cross-site scripting, which is essentially injecting a code onto a page that is reflected back to the user. And what that code would do is anything I told it to. So what I was ended up doing was being able to steal people's profiles, log in as them, and then sort of do anything I wanted, of course. My goal was not anything malicious necessarily. My goal was just to do a proof of concept. I ended up submitting the proof of concept, which is basically, here's my finding, here's what it looks like, and here's what it can do, to MySpace about 45 days before I did anything else mm-hmm. with it. And at that point, then I submitted that to them. They never responded. So I said, all right, I'm going to do a talk about it at DEF CON. So I ended up taking that to DEF CON, doing the talk. And the funny thing about the DEF CON talk is as I was up on stage talking about the vulnerability that I was showing to the audience, I had my profile deleted. So someone who failed to read the first email with my recommendations on the problem was in the audience, and they ended up taking my profile down, and no one ever contacted me from, at this time, it was News Corp or from MySpace, but it was a very interesting time for me, especially because I was pretty young.
Did that reflect in any of the kind of MySpace losing publicly, you know, not being, you know, kind of going downhill, or not being an interest for people to be on, or was it totally more of the Facebook that migrated people away?
I think it was a little bit of both. I don't think I had much of an effect on that, but there was a larger worm. I believe it was called Sammy, S-A-M-Y, and he actually created a worm that propagated through MySpace. I didn't make anything nearly that complex or malicious. I think his scared some people into leaving the platform, or at least, you know, second-guessing the platform.
Yeah.
But I kind of agree with what you also said in the latter. Facebook just was a better platform. And yeah. It was more exclusive, so people wanted to be part of that exclusive group, you know?
Yeah. So give us a 30-second on your company, Aposi.
Yeah, totally. So Aposi creates software that integrates with the browser to stop phishing and malware. And where our product really shines is that we stop all of the attacks that no one knows about. A lot of companies, a lot of products in the universe, I guess you could say, work off of sort of what's called a blacklist, which is that something that is known then gets blocked so all their customers benefit once they know about the attack. Mm-hmm. Our focus was to say, let's stop the attack that no one knows about anywhere, and we're going to do that in the simplest place at the last point of failure, which is the browser. So as you're about to click that phishing link and type in your password, or as you're about to download that virus to your machine, our product stops you and says, hey, don't do that. You can't do that because this site is potentially malicious, and we make it safe to browse any site. You can go to the worst site on the internet, but with our integration, you basically are protected from the very first minute you install it. And it works both for individuals and for large organizations as well.
All right, well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk to Rick Deacon.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back. We're talking to Rick Deacon here again, the founder and CEO of Aposi. And obviously, you've put a lot of time and a lot of effort into phishing, preventing phishing. Let's look at what your idea of, in cybersecurity, what is, you know, the industry problem that is the biggest that you see? And I imagine it's going to be somewhere along this line of phishing.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can talk about it a little bit larger than just nailing it down just to phishing. And I think the larger problem is there is large workforces, companies with hundreds of thousands of people, and not everyone is of the same sophistication level when it comes to the computer. So what happens is that people make mistakes, people do things unknowingly that can give away lots and lots of information. A data breach, for example, any of the largest ones you read about in the news every week. And I think the problem, the crux of that problem, is basically a lack of education to the user and the lack of proper controls to keep them from being able to make those mistakes. Like I mentioned, not something knowingly, not something that they're doing because they want to be malicious, but just because a simple mistake of, I didn't realize this was fake, I didn't realize I was doing something wrong, and then ultimately costing the company lots of money and potentially sometimes people their jobs, which is very unfortunate because it typically is an accident. So the problem boils down to a human security issue. The employees are typically untrained, and there isn't an effective means of training everyone. And then on the other side of that, the solutions that are in place inside of organizations are typically either outdated or poorly maintained or do not have the right sort of information to protect individuals against the threats. So we're always trying to fight the what we're calling the weakest link battle, which is the employees of every organization. And then on the opposite side of that, still related to the human, is the security teams inside of the companies are just not large enough to effectively handle all of the security situations that are recurring inside of their organization. So you have security teams that need more people to then go back and inform their employees. And what happens there is that you need to have something that augments both. How do you fix both problems at once? And basically, that's what I see being the problem, is this idea of a human security issue.
You know, I have heard so many people talk about the user's the weakest link, you got to train people. But if people aren't interested in learning about it, I mean, I've seen, and I've been one of those people, you take those every 6 month security assessments and you have to sign through and click off that you're certified, that you know the internal policy. Come on, I mean, there's just no interest in that. You do it because you're forced to for compliance. We have to have people that like this, and it has to be interesting or some other way of deterrent than to just tell people you have to train. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I completely agree. It's actually a very, very difficult thing to do. When we first started Aposi, our goal was to sort of create gamification of security awareness. That was our very first product that we offered as a company. And what we found is that security teams love that. They love the idea of getting something that's engaging and interesting for their users. But the flip side of that is no matter how hard you try, people want to do their jobs. They want to do it quickly, and they want to do it effectively, and they don't want to spend time learning. And it's a rough and tough thing to handle, and I can say this with experience now, saying that I had a miss. We did not make a product that was right off the bat something that everyone wanted. This was a product that we then sort of phased out and said, all right, where do we actually focus our efforts versus on the training aspect? That being said, I think that a proper training program, if you can get people engaged, and the way to do that is basically spend as little time as possible delivering the most amount of information. So our methodology that we tell people that just ask questions and say, hey, what can we do to create a better, more effective training program without spending money on a ton of products related, is do frequent, continuous engagement. So that is, if you can engage people for 5 minutes a month or 5 minutes a week even, that might be even a lot, but if you can do 5 minutes a week, 5 minutes a month, you can keep people thinking about security top of mind. Mm-hmm. They're continually saying to themselves, okay, this is how I question this email, make sure what I'm doing is correct. And that's how to create an effective sort of training platform. And if you can use gamification elements or something that strikes to the people, keeping it relevant and up to date, things like, you know, having a Game of Thrones themed security awareness, that can actually help people learn from that perspective. But I do agree, it's a tough thing.
You know, I've actually, and this is where my thoughts on that come from. Actually, I've done security training for years. I put out my own, and didn't have much penetration in the market, and had some an SEO company do some research for me. And they found that, you know, when blasting out security links, we'll say topics, to millions of active known users, that they did tests where they'd send out links of security, links of known current events, links of active products, other people's new products, and placebos. They got more hits on the placebo than security links. Top two reasons were, when I see a security link, I think somebody's trying to hack me. Second reason, when I see security, I'm reminded I'm not supposed to click on things I don't know. It is a human psychology problem that keeps people avoiding security topics.
Interesting. Wow. That's really cool, actually. I think that's actually, in some ways, a very good thing, though. If they're trying to not click things based on the fact that they know that, hey, it says security, I'm reminded now. If you keep them up on that reminder, then maybe they won't click anything that's bad. Of course, not everything is worded so directly.
But you got to get them involved in your training. And those training things have security topics. But I'm just telling you, it's a kind of a human psychology lesson. And there's very few topics like that on the web, but there's a couple others. So, you know, we have to work within the bounds of what the human aspect is. Just like the human people that click on and are the weakest link, they're also the most resistant to getting the information on it. So maybe we need a technology solution, something that forces them. I think you have something in that area too, right?
Yeah, so when I took a step back, I guess you could say, from the security awareness solution that we were creating as our very first product, we said, okay, so how do we augment the security team and sort of have a solution that, when installed, works, doesn't need to be maintained by the administrators, and then can be sort of quote-unquote left alone. If you don't want to look at it, you don't need to mess with it, and it's protecting users from day one. Reverse side of that, we want something for the user that isn't intrusive, because the last thing that you want to happen is to have a security tool that, when they go visit a website, pops up with a big red exclamation point and says, hey, you can't go here, contact your administrator if you want to find out if this is something you can visit. So what we created was the browser integration that lets you visit any site you need to, whether it be, you know, a malicious site or a good site, and we protect you by making it read-only. So what happens is that once an administrator installs our product across their company, everyone is protected day one, hour one, and we're not interrupting the workflow of any individual. They go about their lives browsing, working, doing what they need to as if nothing changed, but in the background, our product is preventing them from losing their credentials or typing in their password or downloading malware or even things like preventing cross-site scripting attacks, like I mentioned about MySpace. Our product actually prevents those things from executing on the user side. So we have a solution that, once implemented, is quiet, stops attacks that are the minute they're created, and doesn't add any overhead for either side, whether it be the user or the administrators. And we've also considered sort of working in the product some sort of awareness pieces, so that if they do visit one of those bad sites, instead of blocking them and telling them, hey, don't do this, we might point out to them on the page, live, what we're looking at and why it could potentially be bad, to give them that reminder that says, hey, this is a potentially bad thing, and here's what you need to pay attention to when you see that. To be clear, our product isn't doing that right this minute, but we've definitely considered that point of failure training, so to speak.
Okay. Well, let me take a break for a minute. We'll come back after we hear from our sponsors.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Rick Deacon, and we're talking about the problem with phishing and the human aspect and insecurity. And you know, we talked about the people aspect and engaging people, training, which we hear so much of. And then you talked a little bit about your product. But when I step back and say, okay, so here's another product on the market. We're so often inundated with security products. If I wanted to do some self-exploration first and say, let me, you know, give me some recommendations of the first maybe three things I could do or to if I had a company that I said, okay, this is a problem, let me start addressing it, let me see if I can make an impact. What recommendations would you give?
Yeah, totally. I'm happy to share that. So basically, my first thought is actually, despite the fact that we have been discussing that training is a difficult piece, is to go out of your way to sort of create that training program that does work. And that could be because of a method using gamification. It could be because of the continuous engagement that I talked about. But it's basically spending some time to realize that your users are trainable, and they're, I mean, as rough as this is to say, because I don't agree with it at all when people say it, is that your users are not dumb. They're not dumb at all. And a lot of times administrators want to jump to that and say, oh, my users are dumb. They're not able to, you know, do this, that, or the next thing. And because of that, I don't feel that they're going to ever be trained. And I disagree entirely. Taking the time to figure out how to engage your specific subset of users with training is step one in preventing, you know, attacks from proliferating through your network and making sure that they are kept safe. The second step of that is tracking what is going on inside of your network, inside of your browsers, inside of your users. So once you now know that they've been trained effectively, now we need to track and try to understand exactly what is happening from that perspective. So how many phishing attacks are we receiving? How many pieces of malware downloads are we getting? Is that number decreasing? How do we decrease it? Taking those analytics, putting them into your security event managers, putting them into your log analyzers, and trying to understand directly where they're coming from, what they look like, and what the patterns are there. Because if you can do that, you can eliminate, using different tunings of the tools that you might already have, a lot of those attacks from getting through. And then that just leaves the what I like to call zero-day attacks. Not zero-day from the perspective of I wrote this code for software that exploits Adobe for the millionth time, but actually an attack that was created and targeted, tailored towards your CFO or your CEO, a spear phishing attack, etc.
So, and just a real quick,
from that,
you had mentioned, you know, tracking, setting up a baseline, and you said start finding out that information, find out trends, what users are doing. How would somebody do that? I mean, sounds like, oh yeah, let me just start listening, but no, this is all digital. Is there tools, you know, to do that, or even freewares out there?
Yeah, so I mean, actually a good piece of software for the network side of things is OpenDNS, and I think a lot of people are familiar with their products, and OpenDNS creates great solutions for monitoring what is going on your network from both a, you know, a software perspective and a network perspective. And it also integrates with a lot of existing tools you might already have to be able to sort of track that information. The other side of that is being able to use a tool, without tooting my own horn, like ours, where you're able to log into it and see, here's the attacks, here's what were stopped, here's what they look like, and where they were going, which is sort of a benefit of us being in the browser. We can see exactly what's happening as it's happening, and so can you as the administrator. And then the last piece is actually doing things to augment the, and this is for the tracking piece, is to augment the security awareness training, doing things like phishing awareness. So setting up internal phishing campaigns so you can see exactly who's clicking, why they're clicking on what emails, and then you can sort of fine tailor tune your understanding of what is succeeding, which then takes you back to step one to say, now that I've tracked the information, now that I know it, I can adjust my security awareness to be focused more on the failure points of what we saw in from the individual perspective. We've also sort of toyed with the idea of creating the score for individuals. So every person in the organization would have a quote-unquote risk score that you could then identify the weakest areas and then train them specifically on those as to not waste their time. So if all of your employees are really, really aware of tailgating, which is following behind the door when someone has a key badged in and just sort of grabbing and coming in behind them, if we know that they're totally clear on what that is and we have no failure points, why do we need to drill it back in their head, if not for other than, say, compliance reasons? We want to focus on where the weaknesses are.
Okay. So now that holds a point that that interests me is, you know, the bringing the human accountability piece in, and you're talking about it through gamification, like, let's keep a risk score. Let's keep a score and see how we've done over time. Apply that to each person, and you're using it to bring the metrics back around and say, what do we need to train them on? But we could just offer some incentives for people who do the best. We could do something like that.
Yep, absolutely. And we also like the idea of having these, I guess you could say champions inside of an organization. The people who are very good at security get sort of become a little bit bugged by the people who are a little bit lower. So then you have this sort of internal communication, not just from the security guys who everyone's used to hearing from, but also from the people that we've identified as being pretty secure individuals. And then maybe they are people that users can go talk to, maybe not reporting to, not as an administrator, not sharing the details of, you know, what they're seeing in their emails, but asking them questions and having them be the people of like, hey, these are the champions in the organization that are like really great at security. You should go have a chat with him about what you saw too. And that one helps the load from the administrator perspective, but two, gets an internal dialogue going where people are thinking about it versus just always going to security where there's always this slight apprehension like, oh, my security guy doesn't like me, or he's hidden in a closet somewhere, it doesn't actually exist, et cetera, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that can happen there.
Yeah, you know, and the one thing you bring up though, as we start talking, and every security solution seems to hit this same point, is we start to track data, usage trends, operator scores on tests, whatever we want to track, but we start to collect these big databases about people's activity and behavior. And it seems to be kind of the crux of security, but there's a big question on what is that used for? And this is the things that, like the WikiLeaks and the NSA losing all their information that they store on people internally. You know, what happens when we collect all this information? It becomes usable, and then it becomes misused.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. I think a critical piece when you're looking at all security products is to try to understand, when you see the words big data, look a little bit further and try to say, yes, I have the big data, but what can I do with it? Am I able to act on it? And I don't mean am I able to analyze then act on it. I mean more specifically, is the data in a position where I can click a button or at least send that data somewhere else where it triggers something that says, this is exactly how we need to make this change. Not an estimated change, but an actual, here it is, here's what needs to happen, and this is how you do it. And that was a critical piece in how we developed our product as well, in the sense of we have the data, but we don't want to burden administrators or people with it. We want to be able to say, here it is, we know exactly the problem, here's what you need to do. Click the button, quarantine this page forever across everyone, and then now you've solved that issue. With going a little more broad with using that idea of workforce risk score that I was sort of talking about, is that you were able to then take that information and act on it directly, saying, here is the exact time that we need to spending on these group of people talking about this type of phishing, and taking that information and making it actionable. Mm-hmm. What you said there, too, is absolutely true. Use the data, but then at the same time, making sure it's not being misused. And I think that's a problem in organizations that have nothing to do with it, I guess you could say. Having these logs, tons and tons and tons of logs, analyzing them, but never having an action to take. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also look at the privacy aspect. Like I had an insurance company, they sent me this little tracker in the mail that says they want to keep track of everywhere I drive so they can, you know, give me $15 discount every 6 months. How many companies are keeping endless amounts of data of our actions so that, you know, later on when you're running for office or you're doing something that's sensitive, there's a database that somebody can hack into and find your actions. It's just a matter of what are we giving up in our privacy, and we always have to be concerned about that and think, every time I hear a new application collecting amounts of data, collecting use patterns, what is that? How can that be used adversely?
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And being a security person, first and foremost, before I was a product person or founded a company, I was, you know, just as paranoid as any of the, you know, security people that you see on the news or anywhere at all. I was one of those guys who don't want to be tracked anywhere, don't want my information to be accessible unless I say so, et cetera. And because of that, I've gone into this process of creating products and just keep every user as safe as possible while also maintaining their privacy and being letting them control their data.
Yeah.
They get to control exactly what can be seen and what can't be. So for our, from our perspective, just very briefly on that, basically we say that here's the data that your company has and what they can see, but it's not tied to you directly. It definitely does not have any of your credentials. It definitely doesn't have any of the information you sent on any of the pages, but we will give the company that you work for the information about that bad page that was visited, not necessarily that, like I said, nothing you entered or how, you know, how you arrived at that sort of, but more so just here's the bad page and here's what you can do about it. And then for the free version of our product, which is available for everyone on any of the major browsers for absolutely no charge, you can actually go in and say, I don't want any data to be sent anywhere. You can turn off all data sending on our product. To be clear, you won't benefit from some of the things like the updated whitelist, the cadence that we update that sort of information and the community sharing, quote unquote. But we understand people like to remain private. So you can take our product and turn it all off and we won't even know that you have anything in it and are using it at all, other than the fact that the download number went up one on the browser. So we've sort of planned that way from the beginning because of our personal desires for privacy.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about the whitelisting thing and everything in your product specifically. What is it that you think sets your product apart? What are the offerings that are, you know, you think really revolutionary in your experience with trying to protect and being a hacker at first? How have you designed that into your product?
Yeah, absolutely. So we designed it with the idea that every company that's going to get hacked is going to start from this one hacker who has a very specific target, and it's one person inside of your organization or multiple people. They're going to set up a server today. They're going to set up a domain. They're going to fake an email address, and they're going to send you a phishing link to steal your credentials right now. And that all comes from my personal experience. When I was doing penetration testing, I was doing that, exactly that. I would set up my server, I would create my phishing page, send my email, and I'd send it to 30 targeted people inside of the company of 10,000, and 29 of them would click. And that's just the severity of the problem. So what I wanted to do is say, I'm not too worried about the viruses of 5 years ago that everyone knows about and we can stop. I'm not too worried about the malware that's already been dissected and blocked and broken and now it's added to the blacklist. I'm also not worried about URLs that are just passed around Reddit and other places that are well known and you can see the URLs. What I'm concerned about is these very targeted attacks that we want to stop from day one. So our product uses a whitelist which says, here are the known good sites on the internet that we're constantly updating and building using machine learning and an image analysis algorithm that we've created. It's sort of our secret sauce, I guess you could say. And that keeps our whitelist updated with here's all of the good sites on the internet to ensure that anything that's not on that list is then kept safe, I guess you could say. So what happens is that if you encounter a page that's not on that whitelist, it becomes read-only. Mm-hmm. So an example of that in practice is if I send you a phishing link right now and tell you, hey, this is a Gmail password reset, you visit that page, it's a fake domain, fake Gmail reset. When you try to type in your password, as soon as you hit a key on your keyboard to type it in, a POSI pops up and says, hey, this page is locked because it's potentially malicious and you haven't been there before. So you are physically unable to enter your password into the page. But what we didn't do was stop you with a big red exclamation point and say, hey, turn around, don't do this, because that is not an experience that people enjoy. We're doing it much more silently while protecting you from it. And what that also means is that if we encounter things like false positives, say your friend sets up a blog today right now, that site isn't malicious, but it might also not be on our whitelist yet. So what happens is that since our product just makes the page read-only, your friend's blog loads. You can scroll, you can click, you can read everything on the page, but you just can't type anything until it pops up. And then when it does, there's basically an unlock button there. So we give the user the ability to say, hey, this is a page I trust. I do really want to type into it. You can click the pop-up, the native Chrome notification, and the native Firefox notification, and say, hey, I'd like to unlock this page and type into it. And that is essentially how our product works. From the business perspective, the company gets to see information inside of the browser that is usually hidden behind encryption. So here's the page, here's the payload, here's the bad sites that were visited, and then they were able to control granularly, here's our own corporate whitelist, our own corporate blacklist, and then when a user requests that unlock, it's sort of reviewed in our process, both by us as a company and then potentially by the organization, allowing people to then, you know, have it whitelisted across the board to this idea that don't block the user from what they want to do and keep them safe at the same time.
Yeah, that's very interesting. If somebody wanted to go download a trial version of this or contact you for the corporate connection, how would they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can visit our website, www.apozi.com, HTTPS, of course. You can also email me, rick@apozi.com, so it's rick@apozy.com. If you just want to go download and try it out, you can go into Chrome, go into Firefox, go to the store, and just type in Apozi No Hack, or just No Hack. So it's APOZYNOHACK. That's what we call the product. You can go download it, use it, as I mentioned, make it completely private for yourself. And if you want to talk about how we implement that into your organization and what that data looks like, obviously feel free to email me and we can be in touch from there.
All right. Well, hey, this is very interesting to me. I think it's something that that a lot of the listeners would engage with, and I hope that you try it out and see if this is something that works for you. But thanks for joining today, Rick, and you have a great day.
Oh, you too. Thank you very much.
The views or opinions expressed by me during this podcast are my own and are not those of my employer, Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.